702.
WhatsApp Profilwe.
On 072 702 1702.
Just a quick reminder, as I said earlier on, a story that, of course, we are keeping an eye on because, of course, we're about to talk to Tim Neary. We're in Nature Diary right now, and we're looking at the Endangered Wildlife Trust launching a world of wildlife accessible to all, essentially a new website packed with information and resources on threatened species and ecosystems that depend on us as much as we rely on them. So, as he does every Sunday, Tim Neary brings us an interesting conversation with the relevant expert about things we ought to know and understand about the natural world and, of course, our relationship to it and our place within it. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Are you well this morning?
I am exceedingly well. I trust you are too. The chickens are doing their thing in the garden. Weather's good, right?
Yeah. Fat chops and Titcher out in the garden squabbling around the place. I have a little bit of a problem with Mrs. Cluck at the moment.
Mm.
Yeah, she's taken to jumping on my lap in the evening while I'm enjoying my whiskey and putting her beak in. So we've got a little bit of a problem. I'm either going to have a chicken that when I cook it at Christmas, it's going to explode and burn for a week, or else it's going to be very happy.
I cannot claim to ever have had a chicken jumping on my lap just because, I don't know, it was feeling friendly or wanted my whiskey. But there we go. It takes all sorts to make the world. Tim, an interesting one, an interesting development, a story that I think that we're all tracking right now, these COP27 talks out in Egypt at Sharm el-Sheikh, where world leaders are discussing things regarding around climate change, but most importantly for countries like ours, that loss and damages conversation or topic, which speaks to how, you know, climate change has affected low income and middle income countries adversely and the most or disproportionately. Have you been tracking the talks and negotiations?
I've been tracking some of it, but I'm going to be very honest and blunt. Okay, COP27 is a bunch of conversations that I'm yet to see that actually deliver.
Yeah,
we have this COP, and I actually called it the COP out the other day, because we go along, we make all these things, we make all the rhubarb, and nothing happens.
Mm.
And until we get it down to ground level, until we understand, and I don't think they've got the understanding, although they say they do, of the impact and the magnitude of the issues and also the diversity of people.
Mm.
And, you know, until we get that right, you cannot stand up there and preach about how we've got to cleanse the world from whatever, and then you've got somebody living in abject poverty going, hell, I just want running water and electricity that works.
Mm.
Mind you, we all want electricity that works. You know, that's the sort of thing, and it bothers me. We want food. We want the numbers coming out that of the high amount of food that breaks down on the farmlands before it even gets to the shop. I mean, the wastage that we have, and are we attending to that, you know, let alone anything else?
Yeah.
How do we attend to the actual wastage that we have of everything? We're just a consumer-driven operation nowadays, and wastage is huge.
Okay.
It's a concern.
So not much hope that you're holding out for these negotiations.
No. Right. I think we'll have COP 97, and we were talking about the same things.
Okay. Well, let's see what happens in these final hours.
I'm wrong.
Listen, Tim, as the conversation that I asked a guest last week or 2 weeks ago, as we were looking ahead to the climate talks as well, was, you know, it's been how many years of this? 27, 30 years of this?
Oh, yeah. And absolutely.
Yeah, we need real and urgent action. But of course, all of that has to happen long before these world leaders gather, right? It needs to happen at provincial, municipal, national government stage before they even meet at the Sharm el-Sheikh, etc. But let's keep on track.
Common sense is what's needed, and it's you and I that will make the change, not the government leaders.
On that note, let's talk the Endangered Wildlife Trust, launching a website packed with information and resources on the threatened species and ecosystems that I guess we all need to know about. Let's welcome to the program Emily Taylor, who is EWT's Marketing and Communications Manager. Emily, thank you so much for your time. Good morning. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Talk to us about this world of wildlife that's accessible to all. you're focusing on threatened species and ecosystems. What was the impetus behind this particular project?
Thank you. The Endangered Wildlife Trust is one of the most established conservation NGOs working in this space to sort of save species, conserve habitats, and benefit people. And, you know, part of our broader strategy and, you know, in fact, conservation strategy in general is to bring knowledge to different audiences in accessible ways, to engage those different audiences in the ways that they need to be engaged so that they feel, you know, that they need to take action and that they need to support conservation and how it's intricately, you know, sort of woven through their lives. And they need to, you know, protect our ecosystems and species. So essentially, we took a look at our website and thought, so what is the website? You know, what functions is it serving? Mm-hmm. And we went through a process to look at what our stakeholders, what our audiences wanted. Mm-hmm. And essentially, that's kind of a source of accurate, valuable, and reliable information and tools and resources to help them engage with conservation. And, yeah, so we designed this quite a mammoth site and taking all of our audiences into consideration and providing what we sort of discovered they want most or they need most. But, of course, you know, it's an evolving project. So Hopefully we'll keep building on the material we've got for school learners, students, you know, partners, the public. So essentially, hopefully, everyone will be able to find something in there.
Mm, absolutely. Tim?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by, you know, I was clicking through this a little earlier, and you've got some lovely things that you guys have brought in under your resources, and I think it's aimed at, some of it is pretty aimed at children, but some of it's also aimed at adults.
Absolutely, and that is a key part of the website, is to become a portal that's useful for people in the sector and students. So we've got a section where we provide data, you know, biological data sharing options for students studying. We've also got a section on sort of priority research questions that we believe need to be explored further for students that want to sort of embark on some kind of, you know, study for conservation and need to know what the key questions are. And, you know, we've got tools for identifying sensitive areas for development, you know, so we're trying to provide those services that all of the different audiences and stakeholders do need.
I think, again, Emily, if you have a look at some of the stuff that you brought out, and I'm just trying to remember what the hell I clicked on now, perspectives. Okay, perspectives I found rather interesting because you've covered a lot of things that, for example, we cover on the program. Population development, captive carnivores, single-use plastics, ivory trade, rhino horn, shale gas, baited shark cage diving. There's a lot of information here that I'm also assuming that some of it gets quite controversial.
Yes, absolutely. We've got are real experts behind those perspectives, but what we do always try and do is to speak from an objective point of view and to really look at the facts and provide, you know, as unbiased sort of portrayal as possible. But of course, we also do have our values as a conservation NGO, and mm-hmm. so those do come in. But essentially what those perspectives really are an opportunity to engage in a discussion with us and with other conservation experts and just get talking about the sort of the issues and making sure that, you know, people are engaged.
You're talking here now of this website that's been upgraded so that it's more useful to people to use, etc. But I'm assuming a fair number of people this morning more than likely haven't heard of the Endangered Wildlife Trust. And, you know, they might have heard of EWT, but I always like to use that full name of yours, the Endangered Wildlife mm-hmm. Trust, because I think it brings out a lot more. What is the work that is undertaken? You're talking people, planet, a lot of the time. And, you're talking across 21 countries now. A little bit of sort of just a quick overview of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we're nearly 50. So we've been going for half a century. And we've just continued to grow and grow as needed. We started out working on a couple of species, cheetah and brown hyena and vultures in sort of South Africa. And we now have 13 specialized programs covering everything from amphibians to, you know, the impacts of transport on wildlife and how national businesses, how businesses and biodiversity are so intricately linked and, you know, that needs to be a question people are looking into, is how we can offer sort of sustainable options that you know, are, you know, better for the world, essentially. And so, yeah, we as we find conservation niches that need filling, we sort of go in and explore those. But essentially, we have three strategic, you know, pillars that we are dedicated to, and mm-hmm. that is the saving species, looking at endangered species, and what the threats to them are, how we can, you know, help reduce those threats, but in sustainable and holistic ways. And then equally important is the conserving of habitat. So a lot of our work covers, you know, relationships with private landowners to ensure that they manage their land sustainably, as well as, you know, assisting, you know, government departments and other partners in the conservation of large areas of land. And then, of course, benefiting people, because, you know, as you said earlier, it's conservation isn't in a vacuum, and it really needs to come down to the grassroots level, and people need to say, okay, it's not just, you know, people wanting to save animals. It's about saving, conserving the ecosystems that we, in fact, rely on. To survive.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, we kind of have those things.
Yeah. Emily, what I particularly like, obviously, and find really empowering about your mission and the work that you do is stated up front, the fact that you do support community-led conservation. You do empower individuals and young people, or anybody really, to understand and know that they do have a part to play. For someone that is listening to our conversation and is thinking, okay, I'd like to somehow be of use or to get involved, how do they do so?
Thank you. Yeah. So hopefully there is a big sign at the top on the website menu called Get Involved.
Yeah.
And that kind of gives people general ideas on the different ways they can take part in conservation, how they can learn. You know, we've got our events that people can come to. Just sort of how we engage with people and what people can do to be a part of conservation in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, I'll give you the final one.
Emily, I've got a challenge for you. You're not saving the bugs and bunnies. You're saving the human race. And the challenge that I have to all the organizations like this is it not time that we actually started talking about what we are doing? Because man needs that. The animals don't need man, the environment.
Yeah.
Is that not a huge challenge for you to address?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, more and more conservation NGOs and departments are realizing that that's where we need to go and what we need to focus on. And so much, you know, more and more of our work is focused on that. But I think, you know, we've come to a point where we have intervened in so many of the natural systems that in a way we're kind of, you know, we need to step up and, you know, conserve those ecosystems that are now affected by us and so are dependent on us to kind of become more sustainable, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Emily, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate you speaking to us. And of course, we will be touching base with you in the future, no doubt.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Have a lovely Sunday.
Emily Taylor is EWT's Marketing and Communications Manager. The website again is ewt.org.za, and that is the Endangered Wildlife Trust. Tim Neary, thank you for that lovely conversation, but I'm not letting you go just yet, Tim. Because you promised us an update on a certain paraplegic turtle, Kina. Tell us about Kina. What's happening there?
It's a lovely story we're going to watch.
Yeah.
Kina is a turtle that got itself involved somewhere along the line off Sodwana where the sharks ate off its front flippers. She lost most of the front end, so she's lost her propulsion.
Mm.
They use the front for propulsion, the back they use for steerage. She has actually rehabilitated herself to the point where she'll never be released.
Yes,
but she's able to get to the bottom of her tank now, and it's if you go to a sharker, go and have a look at this, and there are going to be some exciting things that are going to happen to try and help Kina have a better life in her environment. She's going to be an ambassador. She's about 35 years old. She is quite a honey, but very shy.
Oh.
So watch this space and keep listening, because over the time, we're going to bring you some really interesting things that are happening with Kina.
So Kina's in the open ocean exhibit at Ushaka.
It's in the open ocean exhibit, not in the shark tank. That would be really been a bit mean.
So macabre, Tim. So absolutely macabre.
But it's wonderful to see, and it's wonderful to see how she's adapted.
Yeah.
And when you realize that if you take your arms and you waggle them in the front of you, that is how Kina moves.
Yeah.
And she doesn't move in her normal flippering way.
But has found a way to get about. That's fascinating.
She's found a way to get about. But as I say, we've got some lovely things coming up that's going to happen with Kina.
All right, lovely. And then a final one. You've been getting a lot of complaints about rats around the Johannesburg area exploding again. What is going on?
Rats are exploding. We've had a nice warmish winter. We've got some lovely rain coming around. People are feeding their birds. Guys, rats go for food. We can take out as much poison as we want to, and we're not going to get rid of this problem. But rats are going for food, and they're going for places to sleep. So kind of look to keep your gardens, keep your if you've got a tipped area in your garden, a compost heap, look to keeping it clean. Take the bird food away at night. These guys have actually eaten their way through the plastic bin of Mrs. Cluck's food to get at it.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure that you limit the amount of food, limit the amount of habitat that they can live in. Old boxes, etc., in your storerooms, clean them out. Make sure that that is an area that they can't get to, and try and reduce that breeding rate.
Okay, lovely stuff. Thanks so much for the reminder. We've so far trapped 6 of them in our yard. So, yeah, we've been on a mission as well.
Whatever you do, do not trap and release.
Mm.
You're just moving the problem.
Yeah.
And the beauty is if you clean your area up, they buzz off and go and live with your neighbor.
Tim, thanks for that lovely conversation. We will catch up again next Sunday.